This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's take a moment now to think about our relationship with computers. There's a pretty good chance you're tethered to one right now, hands on a keyboard or smartphone in your purse or pocket. In one way or another, most of us are connected to these machines much of the time. Now, researchers at Tufts University are working on a new technology that will make that connection even closer and more intimate. That's what my co-host Anthony Brooks found out recently when he visited Tufts Human-Computer Interaction Lab.
That's right, the Human-Computer Interaction Lab. And here's how Rob Jacob, a computer science professor here at Tufts, describes what goes on here.
Well, imagine a computer that could adapt itself to you. Anything where you're fairly busy, it would know more about your mental state and it could adapt.
Jacob is talking about computers that adapt to you not by reading your browser history or by asking you to fill out a survey, but by reading your brain. All you have to do is put on a headband.
There's no gels. There's no painful long setup.
No needles.
Yeah.
No needles, just a headband, which keeps a few electronic probes pressed against my forehead. In a sense, it allows the computer to read my mind. Or at least to understand how hard my brain is working.
What we've been best at measuring so far is mental workload or cognitive workload. So if we find out that your workload is going up or going down, we could tweak the computer a little bit to suit your current state.
So the headband tells the computer whether I'm stressed and overworked or relaxed and ready to take on more tasks. Here's Sergio Fantini, a professor of biomedical engineering here at Tufts.
It's actually measuring a combination of blood volume, how much blood there is in the brain, blood flow, how fast blood is flowing through the brain, and blood oxygenation.
Fantini and Jacob have been putting the headband and the technology behind it through a bunch of experiments that could seriously change the way we interact with computers. Take, for example, your social media traffic. Emails, tweets, GChats, and Facebook posts can clutter your screen and your mind when you're trying to get something done. So here's Evan Peck. He's a PhD candidate at the Human-Computer Interaction Lab.
If we interrupt you when you're very busy, it's really disruptive, right? And, you know, people have shown that your stress levels go up, you get more anxious, in addition to you actually doing worse at whatever you're doing.
But put on the headband, which tells the computer how hard your brain is working, and it can actually pick the best time to interrupt you with an email or phone call.
We can actually kind of monitor your brain state, you know, as you're going about your everyday life. We might actually be able to figure out the right moments to interrupt you.
Oh, that's really interesting. So in other words, if someone's trying to call me on my cell phone, I won't actually be alerted unless I'm in a state to receive that. Is that the idea?
Yeah, definitely. So it also depends, like, who's calling you, right? Right? So, you know, my wife calling me is very different from, you know...
Your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Beyond the social implications, this technology could be used in certain professions. For example, if an air traffic controller is being overworked, a computer could detect that and scale back the workload. Which is what happened when I put on the headband and started an air traffic simulation exercise.
Your goal is to fly a bunch of UAVs to a series of targets while avoiding obstacles. And so you'll see a whole bunch. You can click and create waypoints, and the obstacles are going to be moving, so you have to pay attention to the number of UAVs.
This is Dan Afrigan, a PhD candidate here in the lab. I'm using a cursor to keep a growing number of UAVs or drones on the computer screen on course, so they don't crash into a series of obstacles.
So it's going to flash. You'll have 2 seconds to respond. The next one will flash.
I see.
2 seconds to respond.
First, there are just a couple of them, so it's easy.
So 2's looking pretty good. 4's looking pretty good. 3's looking pretty good. So now I can go to 5. And 5 has to go out here.
And so in the last couple seconds, it actually noticed that your workload was very low. You were very relaxed. And if you can see now, UAV 6 has entered the simulation. You had enough free resources.
So more drones appear on the screen, and my job is more challenging. And the computer sees that my brain is working harder. In fact, it gives me a number that quantifies my workload. As I struggle to keep as many as 10 drones on course, that brain workload number goes up. But I can also make it go down.
So if you just try to relax for a few seconds.
That's amazing.
And we can see it dropping.
So I started taking deep breaths, and that number dropped from about 41 down to about 30. And now as I'm talking, and explaining it's going up.
Right. If I can ask you to do some mental multiplication in your head.
All right, 6 times 6 is 36. 6 times 12 is 72. 12 times 12 is 144. And it's going up. So this number is shooting up to like 73, where it was at 30. That's amazing. Rob Jacob says this technology could be useful in many fields where mental concentration is crucial, from air traffic control to driving trucks, buses, and trains. But with growing concern about privacy, federal authorities can already read our emails and texts and tap our phones. Now comes technology that could allow them or employers to monitor our state of mind. Where's the line between, I want my privacy, you know, I want to do a job and not necessarily have my supervisors know everything about what's going on inside of me that I don't even know.
So if this is your personal system and it's working better for you because it knows more about you and it keeps all its data and doesn't tell anyone, this is great. If this is connected to your boss, maybe it's not so great. But it's the same technology. It can, like any technology, be used for good or ill.
Is this technology that we're seeing that you're developing here and experimenting with, is this about to jump out into the marketplace? Are you about to?
About to might not be the right word, but yeah. We can definitely see a path where you won't need this very expensive, elaborate instrument. All it does is shine light into your head and measure the light coming back out. You could do that with a much more compact, cheaper thing someday. We're working on a way to integrate this into Google Glass or, you know, baseball hat or something.
Rob Jacob and his team are running a number of experiments with this technology. Among their ideas, to generate movie recommendations based on how people's brains respond to other films. Or it could help a piano player develop improvisation skills, with the brain signaling when it's ready to take on more complex harmonies. It's all part of a future when we'll be communicating with our computers without even knowing it.
My co-host Anthony Brooks with that story about the Tufts University Human-Computer Interaction Lab. Well, stay with us because coming up, we'll take a look at a new history of a much underrated man, John Quincy Adams. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.